Right. Well, you're welcome. This is my room. This is the thing I built about 2 years ago. 25 square metres and a beautiful, lovely wooden floor. Polished pine. I'm very proud of that. That's why I take off my shoes or my boots when I come in. And I put on these out white. They're a kind of a... They were a Christmas present, actually, from Natalie, a Russian woman, about 2 or 3 years ago. Big white owl felt boots, slippers. Because I like to preserve the beautiful sheen of that wooden floor. And I do sit here. This is where I work. I'm on my own. I can look out in the lake. I can light the stove beside me. And we're here. And that is my coal scuttle. And believe it or not, that came from Travellers. See how old it is? I got that 1994 in Tullamore from friends who were Travellers and made them down there. McInerney's was their name. It's a mighty one. And my flutes are over here. I can't really play much of them, but there's some energy I get from musical instruments. I have a banjo there in the corner as well. I got as a present. Anyway, I play like people sing in the bath. So I'm in here, in this room, alone, stove going, beautiful fog outside, the stillness of winter, not a leaf falling. I lived in Donegal one time, out in Bradge. Out of the airport in Carrigfinn, I spent a winter there. And I had a little chalet, and it was no more than a tent. And the loveliest thing in winter was the screech of the wind coming in from the Atlantic and heading through the mountains. And you'd hear it all around you, every four walls of the little chalet. You could hear the wind, because you'd always get a storm. Usually there's always a storm sometime around this time of year, around just midwinter. There's usually a storm, and in places like that, the screech of it through the trees, through the wind, through the stone, through the rocks, coming up from the beach, or the roar of it on the beach if you braved yourself out and went out walking. And then the sound of the little cork bottle, the little cork in the whiskey bottle when you come home, and the sound of a fire crackling. And there's another thing about, like, you know, Silent Night, which we all grew up with, that song, and nobody thinks of it now so much. But it's the silent night, you know, that in one sense, like, there's an absence of sound, there's an absence of activity, there's an absence of talking, there's an absence of work, there's an absence of growth, you know. The trees aren't growing anymore, the grass is not growing, the animals are asleep. There's nothing happening. And that's what you call hibernation. You know, the place where nothing is happening, where all things are over and finished. And there isn't something new yet. It's the space between the notes. And it's interesting because Ireland, like the name for Ireland is Hibernia. The name for Ireland is the winter land. You know, they all came up from the south, from Rome and, you know, all the places in the Roman Empire. And they got as far as Britain and they said, well, this is bad enough. And then they looked over at Ireland and said, ah, no, you couldn't live out there. That's Hibernia. That's winterland. So in a strange way, you know, Ireland is a place that comes into its own in winter. Ireland is a place that, you know, its real soulful time is winter. The other thing, I suppose, about winter is waiting, you know. Like, the days get shorter. It gets shorter and shorter. And sometimes I'd feel nostalgic. I feel you start looking back at when you were younger, at what you were able to do when you were younger. You can feel very old coming into the winter. And you can dread the mornings. And you can feel, I do feel insecure sometimes, you know, because I can't wake up happy. I went through a period where I really didn't like the windmills. I kind of, they got on my nerves. And I'd look out and I kind of focused on them as kind of something to be negative about and feel, oh, I don't like all these windmills up the hills. And you'd feel sometimes that, like, you can hear the windmills more in the darkness than you can. The volume seems to go up when you put off the lights, you know, because in the summer you don't really hear them. But then in the winter, on a cold night, you can hear them. I think maybe one of the ways to cope with winter, to cope with entering into the space that is winter, is to go asleep. You know, hibernate. Give yourself permission to lie in bed. I think it really works. You know, especially if you're, again, in my experience of being depressed in winter, you're also exhausted. And you need to give yourself permission to lie and sleep if you feel like sleeping. And there's nothing more wonderful than dozing. And it's a word that's gone out of fashion. And I'm sitting here like by a stove, you know. And sometimes I'd say I come in here to this room. It's a separate room on its own. And I come in here to work. It's like a studio. But sometimes I come in the winter. And then I start dozing. I mean, might start reading a bit of a book and the next thing about three paragraphs and I'm, you know, sleeping there at 11 o'clock in the morning. Even the cats do it. Well, everybody will know this. Your cat in the summer is energetic and frisky and all the rest of it. And it comes at a certain moment, it comes to, and they take to the fire and they won't be budged and they'll be watching you and they'll be hiding. They're kind of wintering in the dark, and they're keeping quiet and they're keeping still and eat plenty, you know. If I could say it like directly to somebody, I would say, will you please go asleep or at least doze? Give yourself an hour a day after your dinner to doze. Or if you're working busy in a job, you go home in the evening and doze. Take it easy. You don't have to wait until 11:30 to go to bed.
Oh, sleep, come for me. I will go quietly where the roof doesn't leak in my heart.
Oh, sleep, come for me. I'm a boat sprung. I'll hide and you'll seek a new star. for me till dawn. I'll be too gone to care how gray the days. The dreams that it chases away.
Get it. There's a dictionary up here now. I'll find the word dozing in this dictionary. Here we are. Dover, Dowless, Douse. Doesn't give it. That's interesting though, isn't it? But you can't find the word doze. I'm going to go through a few of them now, just for this word doze, right? Titchen nail orum. And here's another phrase for doze and tan egg sunsiocht. You know? Hanning tamal chodle hitch nail air. That's hit nail air, and I think what is nail is something to do with a dream or something. And then sunsiocht is like sunus. It's really interesting to get the word suntiok and find that, you know, the word is connected with it, the envelope of meaning that's around the word doze in Irish.
It can't be too long for me. I count the hours till I sleep with your feet by my feet.
Your breath on my cheek.
Like a nyal, nyal, swoon, fit, a trance, a wink of sleep, a glimpse of light, in the throes of death, a nyelt of bosh, a nyelt of bosh, in the throes of death. You see, a nyel is a little thing, a doze. Nail. Also means a cloud. Same word. So a doze is like a cloud. It's a cloud that comes over you. A cloud that you're in. Dark clouds of the night. Nielta duva nahia. Good. I'm going out for wood. A few logs. Back in a minute. Take off the old boots. It's a wonderful thing to use the darkness to let go of all the kind of baggage of negative stuff and begin again with anybody. But the biggest person that is really interested to do this with is yourself, right? In other words, I have an idea of who I am. I've spent years looking in the mirror, telling myself who I am. So I really take myself very seriously. There's nobody in the world that takes you more seriously than yourself. There's nobody makes such a fuss about you except yourself, right? This is the way we go on. We build up this sense of identity. We say, this is me. Now, let go of that. Do you know what I mean? Let go of that. And then you think when the new year comes, you're going to discover a new person. You're going to invent a new person. You don't live in the prison where, say, with a husband and wife, and he'll say, I know she never takes sugar. No, no, no. No, well, she doesn't enjoy the music now. And people sometimes, in couples, they label each other to keep each other in prison, to keep each other nettled down to an idea of each other that they can handle and take ownership on. So, no, she never, she never likes the music now. You know, she wouldn't stay for a dance. Well, he'd get really confused if she did stay for a dance, wouldn't he? You know, if she did enjoy the music. I suppose, too, there's a kind of a fear rises in me in wintertime, you know. And it overwhelms me sometimes, and I'd find it impossible to be still. Oh, the huge fears that come out of you. And I suppose that's why we spend so much time being active, you know, during the year. We keep going around being busy, because when you're busy, you can avoid things inside yourself that you're afraid of. So the winter kind of, I suppose, gives me a time where I can't escape what's inside. And even if it's an ocean of rage or anger, or I think if I let it out, if I let it surface, if I look at it, then it's okay. It's okay in the sense that, you know, when you watch disturbing emotions inside yourself, you're looking at a fire. You're looking at a fire. When you sit still sometimes and you allow what's annoying you to come out, because like if you see somebody's busy, you know, you go into a house and you see somebody and they're busy like a beaver in the hot press, and the only thing you see is the back of their head. You then say something like, is there something annoying you? And eventually the other person will tell you, no, I met somebody in town and they said something to me. And because when something is inside that's troubling us, we tend to get fierce active, fierce busy. And I think that when you're in wintertime and you get an opportunity to be still, and what arises is like a fire, it's disturbing. You recognize things in yourself that, you know, but the real trick is, don't put coal on the fire. Whatever worries you, whatever depresses you, disturbs you, allow it to surface and just observe it. It will die like a fire. Eventually, no matter how hot it is, it will cool and die and be over. I can hear a car coming now. The lights are over there, beyond those trees. And that, I can tell you, is Mary, my neighbour, going to evening mass. Wouldn't be her driving, it'd be a fella picks her up, she'd be in her 80s. And that's the way, in the country, you know all the sounds, right? And you know the sounds of different cars. Like a car away down the hills coming up, not only could you hear the car, but you'd know who it was. There's another thing about the darkness, and we're standing here under a Scotch pine, which is, I think, my most favourite tree, because it's beautiful, shaped like a Japanese tree. It kind of goes straight up the trunk, and then there's nothing on the west side, but on the east side the limbs extend, they reach out as if they were reaching out towards the lake. And because there's a moon tonight, even though it's now gone dark, you can still see it silhouetted against the grey fog of the night. We'll just listen now, just for a minute. The extraordinary thing about the darkness is that you can hear more in the dark than you can in the light. I mean, if you're standing here in the middle of summer, you wouldn't hear anything, or you wouldn't notice the sounds. But when it's dark, you notice every sound. You know, it's why, like children or even adults, you can be afraid of the dark. You're lying in a room at night, you hear the floors creaking at night in a house. You never hear them in the daytime. At night, they make shocking noise, the floorboards, because it's dark. And whatever magical thing darkness does to sound, it makes the sounds more substantial. I can hear the drops of rain actually just dripping from the trees. I can hear the drainage of water from the roof. I can hear another car in the distance, possibly McDermott's. In a few minutes now, you'll hear the sound of that car getting louder. See this extraordinary image of the headlights. When the car's going up the hill, you get these shafts of light going into the fog, and they're like huge big tunnels of light into the night sky. And there he goes, Michael, off to Mass. It's good to see someone still going to Masses around here. We're at a waterfall called Scardon, which is a word that's used frequently. It means the kind of watery mist that comes off a waterfall or off a lake. Scardon. And today everything is wet, everything is dripping. We're getting very wet. You might as well be standing inside a dishwasher. You're inside a cloud. And the valley, the gully, the waterfall, the lush green vegetation, and us are actually standing inside this dripping wet cloud. It's drenching us. It's like a rainforest. And it's funny that in the Irish language, dozing is to fall into a cloud. So we're dozing. Now, can you hear that? I'm listening now at you, and we're listening to a windmill. It's a huge big pillar with these three blades on it. It's white. And again, everything around it is simply cloud. And some of the windmills in the distance, like, you can just barely see the blades moving in the clouds. And there was a time I didn't like windmills because I think of the politics of it, and I suppose I'd come down on the side that says it's sort of a waste of time. But when I walk up here into the mountain, into the bogland, you have to get used to the windmills because they're all around you. And you learn to think of them as fairly elegant. And you'd have to say that in January now, there's a just tiny extra speck of light in the fog. And yet there's also a sense of, I don't know, transformation and hope. You've come through the winter. My father used to say, they used to have a saying that the cock takes a longer step on the 6th of January, which I suppose in some way meant that there was more light in the day. Then you're left up here with the windmills and a sense of hopefulness, excitement about the future. It's a new year coming. And we can... It's one of the great things about the human species. We can always reinvent the world. You know, we can make mistakes, but we can let go of them and begin again. And do a second draft and a third draft. Rewrite it. And like Beckett said, fail better. So that'd be my hope.